Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Laveau. If the U.S. has a strategy when it comes to the wars on Russia and Iran, it's not obvious. Instead of pursuing an end of hostilities in Ukraine, there is talk of using tactical nuclear weapons. Instead of honoring the MOU, Washington turns to more sanctions on Iran. These are strategies to continue war. Crosstalking strategy. I'm joined by my guest, Dan Kovalik in Pittsburgh. He is a professor of law and the author of The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care. In South Carolina, we have Ethan Levens. He is an independent social media journalist. And in Lisbon, we cross to Alexander Guerrero. He is an international legal analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Dan, let me go to you first in Pittsburgh. And again, I thank all three of you for getting up so early in the morning. Dan, what is there an overall strategy to what this administration is doing when it comes to these wars of choice in Ukraine and Iran? I'm asking it because I listen to the administration all the time, and I listen to the Iranians, and I listen to the Russians, and I listen to the all other players involved in here, and I can't get my hands around it. What's going on? For example, there was this economic D-Day declared. Secretary of Treasury Bessin said, you know, the use of military means is no longer necessary. It will be economic. And then 6 days later, there's an attack. Okay, I mean, I can't get a coherent understanding if there's a strategy at all, Dan.
Well, I think all of us are trying to discern what the administration is doing with these wars. I did come to the conclusion some time ago that the goal of U.S. Foreign policy and U.S. wars was chaos. I do believe that the ruling class of the West has decided that they can extract the most resources and labor in the midst of chaos and instability, and that creating that, you know, has some benefits. And so when you look at the Middle East, I mean, you see the entire region in foment. You see Israel being backed by the West, destroying Palestine, destroying Lebanon, destroying Syria. So again, destruction and chaos seem to be the goal. And, you know, Trump, when it comes to Iran, has said that. He said he wants to destroy Iranian civilization. I mean, he's been pretty open about that. And I think the same is true in terms of the war, the proxy war with Russia, and that's what it is. It's a proxy war. The goal is to destroy or destabilize Russia and divide it up. So I think that's the grand strategy. Now, tactically, what they do day to day, I agree.
But Dan, I mean, if that's the overall strategy, and I like your approach to that, it's not really working very well, and even tactically, even worse. Ethan, if there is a strategy here, and I think it's in doubt if there is one here, how is that benefiting the United States? Or if I can ask you personally, how is it benefiting you? Okay, how are the proxy war in Ukraine and this unprovoked war of choice against Iran? How is it benefiting you, your generation, the people you know?
It's not benefiting me at all. It's actually hurting us negatively, whether it's gas prices, food prices, whether it's just looking at my own politics and reassessing all of that, having to spar with my family and my friends about what's actually happening. And most importantly, it's the cost of living. People are driving to work, paying more money, and this is all because of actions the U.S. took. The Strait of Hormuz was wide open while Russian oil was flowing everywhere. All of this was before 2022, 2023, and obviously until now. But now the whole world is in a state of confusion. Everything is getting more expensive. And a lot of the blame, most of it, especially with Iran, all of the blame falls on the United States. And these are decisions that politicians are taking. Americans are not voting for war. We're not voting for proxy wars. We're not voting for weapons to go all across the globe. None of us want this. We're voting on cost of living, health care, food prices. It's pretty kind of simple what Americans care about. No Americans care about what's happening now. And obviously, the administration and everyone everyone in Congress doesn't care, because if they actually cared, they would understand launching this war is only going to hurt Americans negatively. There's no benefit whatsoever. They like to push that the Iran's building a nuclear weapon, therefore everything we do is justified and we have to do everything, and whatever the Americans have to sacrifice, whether it's bankruptcy, whether it's not being able to buy certain food at the grocery market, whether it's gas prices being higher on the way to work, all of that is a necessary sacrifice. And this is what they're relaying on Fox News, on CNN. This is the talking point, that they must do whatever it takes against Iran so Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon, when in reality, they've never had one. You listen to their statements, they don't want one. And now, if anything, we've pushed them even further to, if they wanted to get one, to get one. So it's been an absolute disaster. It's not for the American people. And the politicians, and most importantly, Trump, and this entire administration just showed us all this year that they don't give a, almost a bad word, they don't care what the average American is thinking or what they need or what they want.
Yeah, and it's the elites, they're the ones that are not suffering. They're not sacrificing, but they ask everyone else to. Alexander, you know, one of the things we get to in looking at both these conflicts in Ukraine and Iran, it seems like the way I look at it is kind of an Israelization of American foreign policy, this approach of no peace, no war, mowing the grass, which, of course, is was a reference to what was done to the Palestinians before the genocide started. And now it looks like this is what the administration is doing with Iran. It won't go for peace, and it can't afford to for an all-out war. So neither of... Basically waiting them out. But waiting them out has its consequences as well. Going back to what Dan said, it may be just chaos theory. Go ahead, Alexander.
Well, let me tell you that I just lost the count of how many times the Trump administration has declared victory over Iran over the last couple of months, or 3, 5, 6 months. Every week, they are yelling that they won, that Iran was defeated, that they can no longer pursue the nuclear weapon, so on and so forth. And I must ask, what is the United States actually looking for in Iran? Because I see that they have a goal. The goal is clear. They want regime change, no doubt of that. But they lack a strategy. They don't know exactly how to reach that goal. What they want is to put more and more pressure in Iran. And what we have been witnessing is that the Trump administration is losing the trust and the capacity to be trusted by the American people itself and even by the international community. We've seen over the last recent days that the Trump administration, they came to public saying, now it's safe to cross the Strait of Hormuz. And suddenly, the Iranians came to public and demonstrated why it is not safe, why there's no peace, there's no agreement. And the United States, they just don't know how to get out of this conflict, because they are there. They thought it would be 2-3 days and that's over. We may impose a regime change. Iran will have a Shah. And that's it, just another day at the office. But they realized that things are actually too difficult to handle with, especially because Iran, they have been dealing with sanctions and with fighting since the Islamic Revolution. So we are talking of more than over 4 years. And this is a matter of existentialism for Iran. It is not a kind of management of politics. And the Trump administration hasn't understood that yet, and they need to do it.
You know, Dan, one thing that seems quite obvious to me through all of this, particularly when it comes to Iran, but you could also apply it to Ukraine, is that it's a huge grift. I mean, what we see, there's one thing that is constant through all of this is market manipulation. So in lieu of a coherent policy that advances American national interests and its people, why don't we just get rich off of it? And that's, again, Jen, I'm not trying to go into the realm of conspiracy here, but that's the only constant through all of this, particularly the 6 months in the war against Iran. Dan.
Well, I don't think that's getting into conspiracy theory. I mean, I think it's real. I mean, you have Trump now is selling the ability to go on Truth Social and hear his prognostications early, so you can bet on them, right? I mean, this is a giant casino that's being run here. And you have companies, you know, in the defense industry that are, you know, openly saying that they're making billions off of these wars and they're happy with them. So, I mean, And I've been saying this for years, and I heard someone else say, you know, in China now, you know, the business of China is business. They used to say that about the U.S. Now the business of the U.S. is war, and it's very lucrative. So I think that's one of the goals of these constant wars is to make a lot of money for a small group of people, the defense industry, the oil industry, and others. I mean, that's not a conspiracy. That's how the capitalist system works.
Well, you know, Dan, just to stay with you here, I find it really quite interesting in contemplating the continued failure of the of these policies when it comes to Ukraine and Iran. Is it possible, you're a lawyer, it's what's crossed my mind all through this is that make as much money as you can, legally or illegally, insider training and things like that, and then everybody gets a pardon and they go into the sunlight, they exit stage. Is that possible?
Of course it is. I mean, I think that's what we're seeing. You know, I mean, just look at Trump's family. I mean, all his sons are making tons of money on this. Trump's making money on it, and they plan all to, you know, he'll just pardon himself and his family. I think you're looking at probably the greatest corruption in world history, at least when it comes to dollar amounts, right? I think the pharaohs would be embarrassed by this type of corruption. It's out in the open, and it's quite disturbing. And as you know, you asked one person, well, is this helping you? No, it's not helping any of the American people, and that's not what this is about. It's helping a few very super rich people.
Well, and it seems that in lieu of a strategy, the whole topic of this program, in lieu of a strategy, it seems it will continue. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on strategy. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing strategy. Yeah, let's go back to Ethan in South Carolina. In all of the commentary, and I watch a lot of podcasts, okay, there's always the reference to the midterm elections, and you've already mentioned it in your first answer in the first part of the program. Unfortunately, most Americans don't consider foreign policy when they vote, but they do think about affordability, and in this case, they're connected if they're aware or not here. But what I find very interesting is that the Iranians and the Russians may not really particularly care about the American election cycle, and in the case of Iran, they can influence how the electorate thinks about Trump's policy, because obviously he wants to keep it out of the papers. He doesn't want it to be in the headlines. He wants to get through this this threshold of the election to find out if he's going to be impeached for the next 2 years. But the Iranians may screw that up for him by going on the offensive. Again, there's this narrative all of the time that Iran and Russia only react. That is a grave, grave mistake. Both are taking the initiative right now. And again, because there is no strategy, they don't know how to deal with it. Ethan.
Yeah, the Trump presidency is essentially in the hands of Iran right now, because everything that Iran wants to do is just going to kill the Republican Party in the midterms. And if the Republican Party loses in the midterms, which at this point is almost a guarantee, essentially, we're just going to debate about how bad they're going to get beat, Trump could get impeached. He's going to get impeached, most likely. He could get removed, even if there's a supermajority in the Senate. It is a possibility. And for Trump's ego, he's not going to take that. And right now, the Iranians hold all of the cards regarding the midterm elections. They come up in just a few months. That's why Trump's trying to slowly de-escalate this. And every time Iran closes the strait again, like we saw a few times this week, Trump has a weird air campaign where he posts AI videos and AI photos of Lark Island on his social media. And the weird part is some people believe that's a little scary, a little creepy. But the majority of the people look at this and realize this guy's a joke. This guy's a clown. You know, Iran can essentially escalate this as much as they want. They don't want to escalate this, but if they need to escalate this, it's only going to hurt America more. The U.S. and Trump especially is stretched out right now. The military is stretched out. People aboard aircraft carriers can't even get fresh food. It is an absolute disaster class, and these soldiers don't want to be there. They've been deployed for almost a year already, and now going into the midterms, where it's going to be a Democratic sweep, Iran knows that all they have to do is fire a missile or two at a ship going across the Strait of Hormuz. Trump's going to freak out. Trump's going to threaten a nuclear attack. He's going to freak out, post an AI video about a ground invasion, and that makes him look even more destabilized. And flipping that to Europe right now, essentially everything coming out of Europe is a mess. A lot of people understand that what's going on in Ukraine is just a embezzling scheme. It's a money laundering scheme at this point. The Ukrainians are losing. This week, we've seen the Russians just pound the skies. There's no Patriot air defenses whatsoever, even in the Middle East. Nevertheless, in Ukraine, Ukraine doesn't have any air defenses right now, and now the Middle East has none. Israel has all of them. Don't worry about Israel. They're perfectly protected. But essentially, this American game of geopolitics stretching out across the world, it has fallen flat. It has fallen into a disaster, into a defeat. And Trump is the president at the time of this crushing defeat, at the time about Americans at home are having to be crushed at the supermarket. And now we watch on TV, and you can only watch the TV so many times and see Fox News talk about this great victory, Iran versus the USA. They make a big graphic about it. I mean, at some point it gets old. Americans learned through Iraq, through Afghanistan. They've learned at this point through Ukraine. These forever wars that the U.S. loves to get involved in, which is now happening in Iran, they're very unpopular. You would have thought Trump would have learned about that by now. But he was defeated in Iran. He was defeated in Ukraine. And now he's going to get defeated in the midterm elections. And it's all his fault. And it's just stupidity.
Yeah, Alexander, just in the last news cycle, the governments of the UK, Netherlands, Italy, and Germany have urged their citizens to not travel to Ukraine, but actually, if they're citizens there, that they actually should leave. But in the same news cycle, Ukraine is winning, which is very strange. One of the an issue that I think is very important to discuss, and Ethan just brought it up, is that now it's seeping into the public discourse about the use of tactical nuclear weapons. Now, when I hear something like that, it means the side that is going to use those weapons believe they're on the losing side. That's why they would contemplate using them. So everything that Ethan and Dan have said, I would add even more cold water on it. Now there's talk of the use of tactical nuclear weapons, which, folks, at the end of the day, tactical, big, small, high altitude, low altitude, it's all the same thing. Go ahead, Alexander.
This reminds me of that sentence saying that Ukraine is winning, but the front is not moving in the right direction. So it's basically what we are talking about both in Iran and here in Ukraine as well. But I don't think that Russia will need to use or to deploy tactical nuclear weapons, because they have been showing that they don't need them. They have too many ways to put more pressure on Ukraine, to put more pressure on NATO and on the EU without the need to use the most extremist instrument that they have in their hands. They have it, but it will be only used, and this is part of the Russian nuclear doctrine, only if the existence of Russia is at stake. And this is not the case now. They haven't reached that level yet. So what they are doing now, and we have been witnessing for several days, this change of approach and strategy by Russia is to attack over and over the Kiev central departments of decision along with military targets. And it's working out because, as you can see, now they are asking, the Ukrainian authorities are asking people to leave. I want to remind you that more or less 2 months ago, we had a lot of European Union diplomats in Kiev saying, we are not going to leave. We are not afraid of Russian fire. I want to see if they will remain in Kiev waiting for Russians to attack and to survive. Because they said that, but they were not expecting this, not the escalation from Zelensky and the prompt answer in the exact same terms by Russia. I have to ask everyone, is Zelensky happy with his 40-day plan to force Moscow to go to the table of negotiation?
But Alexander, that was an act of escalation. And so what happened? Oh, let me think. Russia reacted and upped that escalation. That could have been, that was easily predicted, and it's exactly what's happened. The 40-day bombing, drone campaign, what was the result of that? Oh, Odessa was closed. Now Ukraine is landlocked, okay? And exactly. And plus we have to think about the global grain exports from Europe and Russia because of this war. Dan, I want to go back to you, and I want to go back to the issue of nuclear weapons. This is a Pandora's box. Okay, there's only one country that has used them, and it's, if we believe what's being leaked from circles around the administration, it's being contemplated again. Your thoughts on that?
It's quite frightening, of course, and I think all of us on this show today have warned for years that this is a risk, that we're getting closer to the use of nuclear weapons than any time in history. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists says that. And what strikes me is how little alarm there is in the press and the public. I mean, when I was growing up in the 70s, you know, the threat of nuclear war felt very real, right, and present.
Oh, Dan, what were the films? Threads, The Day After, you remember these?
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of films. And in fact, Reagan saw a film that made him want to get rid of all nuclear weapons, but he was told he couldn't do that. But now there's a total, you know, lackadaisical approach to this. People don't seem to care when, in fact, I think the chance of a nuclear weapon being used is very great. I fear that Israel will use one or more against Iran or others. And again, what this will do in terms of causing a, you know, a nuclear winter or other fallout.
Well, but proliferation, because you and I are closer in age as opposed to our other two guests on the program here. We called that taboo. We said that was unthinkable, but it is now thinkable. Okay,
it would.
And it could allow proliferation. The Gulf countries may want that. We have many countries around the world may want to use it, and it's just a regular weapon. And that's why we said it was taboo. That's why we called it unthinkable, because you can't be casual about using nuclear weapons. Ethan, what does your generation say about this? Does anybody worry about a nuclear winter? Because Dan and I, growing up, we were warned about it on a very regular basis. You guys, you weren't around at the time, but it was very real.
No one is really worried about a nuclear strike, to be honest. No one is worried about it. It seems so crazy that it would never happen. Honestly, it's a joke. It's just never going to happen. I hope it never happens, but my generation's not worried about it. I think most people are not really so worried about it. Maybe the Europeans are a little worried about it, watching what's going on in Ukraine. I mean, those people are, Europeans are scared to death. They're scared to death. I mean, I want to ask them, are you ready to die for Ukraine? Are you ready to die for Zelensky? You see all this big talk online. You see the big talk from the European politicians. Do they not understand that if they want war with Russia so badly, if they win the war like they talk about doing against Russia and fracturing Russia, the war could end? The world could end. Is that something they just refuse to grasp? If Estonia wants to fight Russia, go for it. If Belgium, if France, if the UK, Germany, if you guys want to fight Russia, go for it. I'll be here in the U.S.
Let me jump here and give Alexander the last minute of the program. Go ahead, Alexander.
Well, if we think about the problem here, what worries me is not that more younger generations, they don't have any idea how it was in the 1970s. But when you think about Ursula von der Leyen, Friedrich Merz, Antonio Costa, all these European officials, they were part of it. They witnessed that. They should be more aware of the risks of a nuclear threat and a nuclear war rather than these younger generations. Kaya Kallas, I don't expect that much, because we cannot expect absolutely nothing from her. But at least these generations, they face the threat of a nuclear weapon or a nuclear war being waged between different powers. So I think that most of them, they are responsible for the increase of tension that we are have been witnessing, and they should be held liable.
Well, for Alexander, or maybe we could just conclude that they have really deep bunkers and they can ride it out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, gents, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Lisbon, Pittsburgh, and in South Carolina. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.